From Pacifica Network, this is Democracy Now!
Strong friendship is essential to peace and prosperity across the globe. And no temporary debate, no passing disagreement of governments, no power on earth will ever divide us.
President Bush travels to Europe for the first time since the November election. We'll go to Germany for reaction to Bush's trip. Then an FDA advisory panel okays the use of Vioxx despite studies indicating the drug has killed tens of thousands. We'll talk to Dr. Sidney Wolfe of Public Citizen. And Brazilian police arrest two suspects in the murder of U.S. nun Dorothy Stang. She dedicated her life to protecting the Amazon rainforest and was shot dead as she read from the Bible. We'll speak with a friend of hers who was with her the week before she was killed. And we'll go to Brazil for reaction on the ground. All that and more coming up. In Iran, a powerful earthquake has killed at least 500 people, injured over 100,000 more. The death toll is expected to rise. The earthquake struck earlier today near the town of Zarada, less than 200 miles from Bam. A year ago, a devastating earthquake struck Bam, killing over 30,000 people. In other news on Iran, the commander-in-chief of the Israeli Air Force said on Monday that Israel must be prepared to carry out an airstrike on Iran in light of its alleged nuclear activity. This according to a report in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Major General Eliezer Shaqedi made the comments during a meeting with reporters. Shaqedi would not say whether he thought Israel was capable of carrying out such an attack alone. In 1981, Israeli forces bombed an unfinished Iraqi nuclear reactor near Baghdad. Meanwhile, President Bush called on Iran Monday to stop its suspected nuclear weapons program. He refused to rule out using force in Iran, but said, quote, "Iran's different from Iraq. We're in the early stages of diplomacy." President Bush also used his trip to Europe to send a message to Syria. He said Monday, quote, "Syria must also end its occupation of Lebanon." Bush's comments came as tens of thousands of Lebanese protesters took to the streets of Beirut to call for Syria to leave Lebanon. While in Brussels, Bush challenged Europe to put aside its differences with the United States over the Iraq war and became a strong partner in, quote, "advancing freedom in the world." He called on Russia to, quote, "renew a commitment to democracy and the rule of law." We'll have more on Bush's trip to Europe in a few minutes. In news from Iraq, U.S. forces have launched a major new offensive in the Sunni city of Ramadi, codenamed Operation River Blitz, in an attempt to weaken the Iraqi resistance fighters. U.S. and Iraqi forces have surrounded Ramadi in preparation for an expected full-scale attack on the city. In other news from Iraq, a new report by Amnesty International has found that Iraqi women are no better off now than under the rule of Saddam Hussein. 2 years ago, the Bush administration promised the overthrow of Saddam would free the Iraqi people from years of oppression. The report states, quote, "The lawlessness and increased killings, abductions, and rapes that followed the overthrow of the government of Saddam Hussein have restricted women's freedom of movement and their ability to go to school or to work." The report also charges Iraqi women have been subjected to sexual threats by members of the U.S. military and that some Iraqi women have been sexually abused and possibly raped while being detained by U.S. forces. Meanwhile, the United Nations is warning Afghanistan could fall back into chaos because the country is still suffering extreme poverty. The UN now ranks Afghanistan as the world's sixth poorest country. The illegal drug trade fuels the economy, and Afghanistan has become the world's leading producer of opium. On the education front, the UN's determined Afghanistan has the worst schooling system in the world. Adult literacy is under 29%. Meanwhile, the country's life expectancy is only 44 years, at least 20 years lower than neighboring countries. A new report by the United Nations warns, quote, "Without mincing words, the fragile nation could easily tumble back into chaos." The report goes on to state, quote, "The basic human needs and the genuine grievances of the people, the lack of jobs, health, education, income, dignity, and opportunities for participation for the Afghan people must be met, and an international aid must be tightly controlled." The UN report also found the U.S. military campaign has helped create a climate of, quote, fear, intimidation, terror, and lawlessness. In business news, the company ChoicePoint is notifying almost 145,000 people across the country that it accidentally sold personal and financial details about them to fraud artists apparently behind a nationwide identity theft scheme. ChoicePoint sold thousands of electronic reports containing names, addresses, social security numbers, and in some cases, credit histories of individuals across the country. Officials in California say as many as 500,000 people could be affected by the security breach and at risk of identity theft. Since forming in 1997, ChoicePoint has collected personal data such as property records, financial data, driver's license information on millions of consumers. It then sells the information to businesses and government agencies for background checks and other purposes. The company claims it now has a collection of 19 billion records. This news from Bolivia. The country's former president, Gonzalo Sanchez de Lozada, and his ousted cabinet have been formally charged with genocide. In 2003, de Lozada's government was toppled after between 60 and 80 people died protesting his free market economic policies. One of his most controversial plans called for the shipment of Bolivian gas to the United States via a $5 billion pipeline through Bolivia's arch rival, Chile. Conscientious objector Sergeant Camilo Mejia has been released from military prison after serving a 9-month sentence for refusing to return to fight in Iraq. The 28-year-old sergeant applied for objector status after witnessing the killing of civilians and the abuse of detainees in Iraq. Upon his release, Mejia said, quote, "I certainly want to continue to lend my voice to the movement for peace and justice of which I feel privileged to be a part." And the active duty army is now in danger of failing to meet its recruiting goals and is beginning to suffer from manpower strains like those that have dropped the National Guard and reserves below full strength. This according to a report in the Washington Post. For the first time since 2001, the army began the fiscal year in October with only 18.4% of the year's target of 80,000 active duty recruits already in the pipeline. That amounts to less than half of last year's figure and falls well below the Army's goal of 25%. Stones by Sonic Youth here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Again, our top news headline: in Iran, a powerful earthquake killed at least 500 people and injured over 1,000 more. President Bush is at a NATO summit in Belgium today, where he's expected to call for greater cooperation between the United States and Europe. The transatlantic trip is Bush's first since his reelection and was billed by White House officials as part of an effort to rebuild ties between Washington and Europe after the rift over the invasion of Iraq. In the keynote address of his 5-day trip in Brussels Monday, Bush declared a, quote, new era of transatlantic unity between the U.S. and Europe.
Our strong friendship is essential to peace and prosperity across the globe. And no temporary debate, no passing disagreement of governments No power on earth will ever divide us.
President Bush speaking in Brussels. He went on to say the U.S. and Europe must together in Iraq call on Syria to withdraw from Lebanon and demand that Iran stop its suspected nuclear weapons program. Bush didn't rule out using force in Iran, saying all options remain on the table. He reserves some of his harshest words for Russia, warning that it, quote, must renew a commitment to democracy and the rule of law. About 4,000 people protested outside the U.S. embassy as Bush met with President Jacques Chirac of France. The demonstrators were part of a coalition of 88 environmental, human rights, peace, and other groups. Bush leaves Brussels for Germany tomorrow, where he's scheduled to hold a news conference with Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder before meeting with U.S. troops. We go now to Germany to speak with Jochen Hippler, a professor of political science and international relations at the University of Duisburg-Essen in Germany, author of a number of books, including Pax Americana. That's with a question mark. We welcome you to Democracy Now!, Jochen Hippler.
Good morning.
It's good to have you with us. Can you talk about Bush's trip to Europe, its significance in Brussels and Germany?
Oh, yeah, it is significant because the situation is that many people in Europe, in Western Europe especially, are very distrustful of the United States government, especially Bush, Cheney, and Mr. Rumsfeld. And the experience has been that before the Iraq war, the U.S. government had lied to the world and had lied to the Security Council of the United Nations, had broken international law. And this has been a kind of traumatic affair. You know, we have had such good relations with the United States of America for decades. And now people really are quite, you know, shocked about having this kind of behavior. And the shock goes deep into, you know, governing elites, including governments, even if they are more polite than the protesters in the street. So people are quite curious whether the U.S. government is going back to support international law and support the rules of the United Nations. So everybody is quite, you know, listening very carefully what the U.S. president has to say there.
Can you talk about Germany now, the reaction of the population?
You're right. You know, public opinion polls indicate that about 70% of the population, and some, you know, public opinion polls are even stronger than that, 70% of the population are critical or hostile to the United States government after the experience with the Iraq war. So what we really have is a public sentiment where, you know, the old ally in Washington is now being perceived to, with distrust, with skepticism, and sometimes with, you know, disgustion, actually. And that is something which even it filters into the conservative parties. Even if you talk to people here from the conservative or Christian Democratic Party, who historically have been very, very strong allies to anything that has been done in the United States in foreign policy terms, even people in the conservative parties now are really getting fed up and are very skeptical. And you know, so everybody would like to have getting closer together again with Washington. But at the same time, the huge majority of the population is really thinking about how we can deal with the United States, not as a solution to many problems, but also as a problem in international affairs itself.
We're talking to Jochen Hippler, professor of political science, international relations in Germany. His book is called Pax Americana. Right now, there are many people who have been protesting in Belgium. Last night, President Bush had a very kind of jovial meeting with Jacques Chirac of France, leading many people to, you know, comment on how friendly they were being and is he going to be invited to Texas? And Bush said something like, we could always use another cowboy. What about what's happening with France right now?
Yeah, the question really is whether George Bush is looking for another cowboy. You know, saying that Europe and the United States shouldn't be united is a very nice thing to say. But, you know, the question really is on what terms, whether it's possible to have a common policy with the United States where, you know, European governments like France and Germany and Britain, whether they can jointly discuss policies and then, you know, decide on one and commonly pursue them, or whether the U.S. government is basically trying to recruit followers in Europe to behave like cowboys in other areas. That's the thing where the French government and the German government both are quite concerned, and where, you know, when we look at the first trip the U.S. had to Canada a short while ago, again, giving some symbols, some nice words about, you know, overcoming their old problems, and then behaving in a way where it was, you know, for many Canadians being perceived as something rude. That's the question the French government is asking and the German government is asking. Unity between North America and Western Europe is wonderful, but it has to be a unity of partnership and not a unity of one side has to follow the other.
And finally, the issue of the Middle East, which predominates all of these discussions, particularly the issue of Israel
right.
and Palestine.
That's right. The question of the Middle East in the sense of having a Palestinian state as a way to solve the conflict over there, plus the problems we have now in Lebanon and we have in Iraq, that is one thing where the disagreements are obviously, you know, very strong, developed between both sides. There are a few positive indications that for the first time, the U.S. government in regard to the Palestine-Israeli conflict seems to move in a direction which is more positive, or to put it mildly, maybe less destructive. There seems to be some pressure supporting now the state-building process in Palestine, which is, you know, being received with, you know, lots of hope and enthusiasm here in Europe. In regard to Iraq, it still is a bit of a problem because the general sentiment here is that many people in the United States government want the Europeans and the United Nations and the European Union basically to get out of the mess that the U.S. has created in Iraq. And this is not exactly leading to enthusiasm here, not having a voice in policy, but having to pay the bill for clearing up the mess afterwards. That's something people here don't like at all. But in regard to Palestine, for the first time for quite a long time, people think there might be a positive trend in the U.S. policy towards the region.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, Jochen Hippler, Professor of Political Science and International Relations at the University of Duisburg-Essen, Germany, author of Pax Americana. And you are listening to Democracy Now! And watching Democracy Now! As we turn now to Washington, a Food and Drug Administration advisory panel has voted to allow doctors to keep prescribing the popular painkillers Vioxx, Celebrex, and Bextra, even though the panel overwhelmingly agreed the drugs significantly increase the risk of cardiovascular problems in patients. The panel proposed the drugs be sold with an FDA black box warning. Vioxx is now expected to return to the market, even though nearly half the FDA panel voted against its being sold. Its manufacturer is Merck, which voluntarily withdrew the drug this fall. The FDA panel decided whether a drug should be allowed to be sold on a straight majority vote. The vote for Vioxx, 17 to 15. For Bextra, 17 panelists vote for the drug, 13 voted to ban it. The panel nearly unanimously recommended Celebrex remaining available. Last year, FDA whistleblower Dr. David Graham publicly estimated 139,000 Americans who took Vioxx suffered serious side effects. Of these users, he estimates the drug killed between 26,000 and 55,000 people. The FDA is not required to follow the recommendations of the panel, but generally does so. Minutes after the announcement, Merck's stock shot up nearly 12% on the New York Stock Exchange. Pfizer shares rose by 5.6%. We're joined by Dr. Sid Wolf, Director of Public Citizens Health Research Group. He joins us in Washington. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning again, Amy.
It's good to have you with us. Your reaction and explain exactly the significance. It's not the FDA decision now, but an advisory panel.
Well, the FDA usually pays attention to what its advisory committee says. I actually testified at this hearing last week, and one of the most appalling things was the extent to which the FDA did not adequately inform its advisory committee about the risks. For example, a study published over 4 years ago showed that Vioxx increased the risk of heart attacks four times above that of Aleve or naproxen. The FDA presentation of that study at the meeting last week made it sound like, well, we don't really understand what this study is about. It's not clear that the problem was just Vioxx. So if I were on that advisory committee and all I knew was what the FDA presented, I might have voted in the close way, except for Celebrex, that they voted last week. We actually filed a petition on January 24th to ban both Bextra and Celebrex. And we asked for the black box warning that is now being said to be the remedy. We asked for a black box warning over 4 years ago on both Vioxx and Celebrex. So there is some serious problem between what the medicine and science shows and what the FDA is telling its advisory committee, what its advisory committee is then feeding back to it based on inadequate information, and what may well happen. I think the large problem is, and these estimates are probably at the low end, there are 100,000 people killed every year in the United States from adverse drug reactions and an additional 2.1 million seriously injured, enough so that they have to go to the hospital in most of the instances. And the question is what's being done about it. It is estimated to be between the fourth and sixth leading cause of death in the United States. A lot of it is preventable. If there are safer alternatives to take, and people are instead, because the doctors are telling them to do it, because the ads on television are telling them to do it, are taking the more dangerous alternatives, then preventable lives are being lost and serious preventable injuries are going on. I ask rhetorically, because that's about all it can be described as, does it make a difference that this year, 2005, the pharmaceutical industry will give the FDA $150 million in cash directly from the industry to the FDA to run their drug review process? Unless you believe that money doesn't talk, then this very insidious law that has been in effect for 12 years has really put the FDA in a position of being sort of a handmaiden in many ways of the industry. Decisions, I mean, we were never uncritical of the FDA, but since 1992, when what is called the Prescription Drug User Fee Act passed, the FDA has been much kinder, much gentler, much less vigilant with respect to the pharmaceutical industry. And I think that this case study last week, taking a look at these three drugs, Vioxx off the market, as you said, for a few months, but now very possibly going back on the market, Celebrex and Bextra, which should come off the market, the distorted decision-making and informing that went on last week is terrible. We found that a major study showing a significant increased risk in heart risk for Celebrex was finished 5 years ago, suppressed by the company, Pfizer, for a number of months, and then sent to the FDA almost 4 years ago. This study was just sort of mumbled over last week. The FDA disclosed the results of this study for the first time, even though it had it for almost 4 years, at this meeting last week, and they just sort of spent a few seconds going over the results. So there is also some possible corruption going on here with respect to Pfizer sitting on this study for a while, the FDA sitting on it for a longer time. Had this study been fully explained and put into context of the other known risks of Celebrex, the vote never would have been 31-1 in favor of Celebrex staying on the market. So the whole process is corrupt, to say the very least, and the people that suffer are the American public. The drug industry, understandably, is trying to sell drugs, and the FDA doesn't bother very often to enforce the laws on false and misleading advertising. And so what people see on television, what doctors see in their office with respect to the risks and benefits of drugs are wrong. But the FDA is supposed to be representing the public. The FDA, though, getting money from the drug industry, is not putting out accurate information. A few days ago, in the wake of this hearing, the FDA said, oh, from now on, we're going to be telling people right away about the risks. They aren't. The book we have been putting out for a while, the new edition, which just came out a few weeks ago, is called Worst Pills, Best Pills, and we're informing people about the benefits and risks of drugs. We list 181 drugs, including Vioxx, Celebrex, Bextra, that we say don't use. We have information that we dig out of FDA files from published studies and so forth. We don't take money from the drug industry, and unlike the FDA that does take money from the drug industry, we can say what we want and what is merited on the basis of science. So the American public is really being misinformed. Physicians are being misinformed. The idea that Vioxx may go back on the market, given that it causes a 4- to 5-fold increased risk of heart attacks and strokes and so forth, is outrageous. It has no unique benefits, and it has unique risks. I mean, our algorithm for looking at all these drugs is, do they have a unique benefit? If it's a unique life-saving benefit to treat cancer and something, and it has risks, but the benefit outweighs the risk. That's
Sid
a
Wolf,
different story.
We have to break, but we're going to come back to you. Dr. Sid Wolf, author of, along with a group of other people at the Health Research Group, Worst Pills, Best Pills, A Consumer's Guide to Avoiding Drug-Induced Death or Illness. We'll be back in a minute. Keys to Be by Express Rising here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We're broadcasting on more than 300 stations around the country, on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates, NPR stations, public access TV stations, PBS stations, and we're broadcasting on both TV satellite networks, Dish Network, Channel 9415, Free Speech TV, 9410 Link TV, and also on DirecTV, Channel 375. We video and audio stream at democracynow.org, and we are closed captioned for people who are deaf and hard of hearing. Our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman as we talk to Dr. Sid Wolf about the latest news of the advisory panel, and let's just clarify this, saying that Vioxx can go back on the market, Celebrex and Bextra as well. Is that right?
Yeah, Celebrex and Bextra are on the market now, and they're saying Celebrex and Bextra are okay to stay on the market, even as you pointed out a few minutes ago. All three drugs have clear evidence of increased heart attack risk, which is evidence not present for any of these older drugs on the market. If there are older drugs that are just as effective, in some cases the older drugs are more than effective. Bextra was turned down by the FDA for approval for acute pain because it didn't work very well. So that in some sense, the pain-relieving properties of these newer drugs may not even be as good as the older ones. They are more expensive, more dangerous, and no more effective. Why would anyone take them? Advertising promotion, the imprimatur of the FDA, its misinformed advisory committee, because the FDA sort of loaded the deck of cards at this meeting last week. As we mentioned, a lot of this information is in our book, Worst Pills, Best Pills. We also have a website, worstpills.org, which has the entire contents of the book. And if you sign up for it, you get bulletins every week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, as we find out some new disaster that the FDA should be telling people about but isn't telling people about.
You have 65 new do not use drugs. What are do not use drugs, Dr. Wolf?
Well, most of the drugs in the book are not do not use drugs, but of the 538 drugs in the book, 181 of them are do not use drugs. In almost all cases, these are drugs that have unique risks but are no more effective than existing drugs. They're often newer drugs. We did a study a few years ago, which we published in the Journal of American Medical Association, showing that in the first 7 years after a drug comes off the on the market, the chances are very high that it will either have to have a new black box warning or be taken off the market. So we advise people, don't use any new drug, unless it's a breakthrough drug, which are very few drugs, for the first 7 years. So our 181 do not use drugs, which include, as I mentioned, Vioxx, Celebrex, Bextra, a birth control pill, Yasmin, a very heavily promoted $1 billion promotion campaign, cholesterol-lowering drug Crestor, a largely worthless drug for treating Alzheimer's disease, Aricept, Suerzone, an antidepressant, a weight reduction drug, Meridia. So most of these 181 drugs, safer alternatives, that are just as effective or more effective, and often the safer alternatives are much less expensive. And on any page in the book where it says, do not use, for instance, Crestor, the cholesterol-lowering drug, says do not use, it says, see page 180 for the preferable alternative, which are other cholesterol-lowering drugs in addition to diet and exercise. So we are not anti-drug, we're just anti-dangerous drug, and unlike the FDA and the industry, we're actually warning people with evidence on why these drugs are so dangerous.
Dr. Wolf, this is a test. It's actually the beginning of the introduction. It says, a 40-year-old woman who dies from a heart arrhythmia, a 58-year-old man who's just developed Parkinson's, a 68-year-old woman with a hip fracture, a 63-year-old woman with memory and ability to think clearly slipping, according to her daughter, a 62-year-old man with recent onset of extreme dizziness and occasional fainting when he first gets up, a 52-year-old woman who suddenly dies while having some dental work done. What do all these people have in common?
Hey, the point of these examples, and these are all actual examples that were brought to my attention, and it, fortunately, in most cases, other than the ones where the people died, these are reversible if you pick them up early enough. These are adverse drug reactions. A lot of people think that when they have a disease and they take a drug and something new develops, that it's the course of their disease. We list in this book 160 drugs that can cause depression, 130 drugs that can cause sexual dysfunction. A lot of men who are taking Viagra and Cialis actually have adverse drug reactions to other drugs that are making them impotent. It would seem to be more sensible to try and adjust these other drugs rather than layering on a second drug to treat what is an adverse drug reaction. I remember when we first started working on this issue, a woman came to me who had a low thyroid level, and she was put on thyroid medicine. A good idea. Problem is, her dose was too high, and she was taking it right before she went to bed. What was happening is she couldn't go to sleep because thyroid has sort of upper qualities. So instead of figuring out what had happened to her that she couldn't go to sleep, they prescribed a sleeping pill. The sleeping pill helped her to go to sleep, but it made her depressed because sleeping pills are one of our 160 drugs that can cause depression. Instead of figuring out that the depression had started after the sleeping pill, they prescribed an antidepressant. So here was a woman who had a cascade of drugs being used to treat adverse drug reactions. I talked with her and arranged to lower the dose with her doctor, of course, of the thyroid medicine to take it early in the morning, and she stopped having trouble going to sleep. So she stopped needing to take a sleeping pill, and therefore she stopped being depressed, and therefore she stopped needing an antidepressant. This is not an uncommon story. The falls and hip fractures that account for 1 out of every 7 hip fractures in older adults are caused often by prescription drugs that lower the blood pressure so far that someone falls. There are dozens of drugs that can cause Parkinson's disease. A 65-year-old man goes to his doctor and says, I have a little tremor. And the doctor says, well, you know, you're 65, looks like you're getting Parkinson's disease, let's prescribe a drug for treating Parkinson's disease. Later on, someone puts two and two together and figures that this guy's Parkinson's disease started right after he started using a drug for his gastrointestinal tract called Reglan. And so instead of treating what is drug-induced disease, Parkinson's in this case, they removed the other drug that was causing it. So aside from everything else in this book, the 181 Do Not Use Drugs, we have a whole chapter devoted to drug-induced disease. And in consultation with doctors, when the patient and doctor realizes that the start of this disease really started after they started a drug, a lot of this can be reversed. Memory loss in older adults is very, very often related to the use of tranquilizers, sleeping pills, and other drugs. And it's a tragedy to sort of write it off to say, well, this person looks like they're getting early Alzheimer's disease, when that particular problem can be completely reversed if someone stumbles on it. So we're talking, as I said before, of 100,000 deaths a year and 2.1 million serious injuries from adverse drug reactions. It's a leading cause of death and disease in this country. The FDA and the drug industry are only telling you the good news about drugs. And let us be very clear, prescription drugs can make a huge difference in people's lives, improve their health and everything. And that can happen without all of the death and injury that's caused by unnecessary prescriptions of unnecessarily dangerous drugs.
We're talking to Dr. Sid Wolf. He's with Health Research Group. He's head of it, also one of the authors of Worst Pills, Best Pills, A Consumer's Guide to Avoiding Drug-Induced Death or Illness. I was shocked to read that 100,000 people die a year of wrongly prescribed drugs. Now, that is that, tell me how many people that is a day.
Well, the 100,000 is all adverse drug reactions, and a large proportion of them, not necessarily all of them, but a large proportion of them are drugs that could have been substituted for a safer drug, or in some cases for no drug, but let's just say a safer drug. As I said in our book, every time we say don't use this drug, there's a safer drug going on. I mean, if we had...
I mean, it is shocking, though. 273, about almost 300 people a day die in this country.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. And a lot of these are preventable. And a lot of these are younger people. I mean, not that older people dying unnecessarily is not an equal tragedy, but a lot of younger people are getting seriously ill, being hospitalized. I mean, this weight reduction drug, Meridia, has caused the deaths of people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. It's a drug that has amphetamine-like properties. The doctor at the FDA who reviewed this drug in the 90s said it's too dangerous, it shouldn't be approved. The advisory committee, in this case, properly informed, voted against approving this drug, Meridia. The FDA, under pressure from the drug industry, approved it. And since it's come on the market, there have been dozens of deaths and a much larger number of people with non-fatal heart attacks, strokes, and so forth from this drug. So here's an example of a problem over being overweight, which really can only be dealt with seriously in a long-term basis by eating a little bit less and exercising a little bit more. But drugs are put out that have no evidence of any long-term benefit and have clear evidence, even before they're approved, of short-term risk. There are wonderful people, scientists, physicians. Dr. Graham is one of dozens who are trying to do their job in the FDA, but they're getting sort of run over by the forces at the top of the FDA that are financed by the drug industry. But 100,000 deaths a year, you think of this as way more by a factor of 2.5 than the people dying in automobile accidents. It's way more than the people dying a year for AIDS. It's one of the leading causes of death. Tragically, it could be prevented, and it isn't. And it affects people of all ages.
Dr. Sid Wolf, last week, responding to widespread criticism of the government's handling of drug safety problems, the FDA announced it was creating a board to advise it on drug complications and to warn patients about unsafe drugs. Lester Crawford, the acting commissioner, said the board would be made up of scientists drawn from throughout the federal government. The board, which is to make its conclusions public on a web page, will not have independent power to force the withdrawal of drugs, but will simply advise the FDA. He also said, Dr. Crawford, in addition, the agency will soon tap into large databases, including those at the Medicare agency, to uncover dangerous side effects in drugs already on the market. The agency said it would increase the number of fact sheets that patients receive with prescriptions. Your response?
Well, a couple of responses. There are over 100 people in the FDA whose job it is to look at what happens to drugs after they come in the market. It's called the Office of Drug Safety. This office has been rendered impotent because a much larger number of people funded by the industry are there to say, we made the right decision when we put this drug on the market, and you're not going to tell us that this drug is too dangerous. There is absolutely no plan to alter the serious and dangerous imbalance of power between those who look at drugs after they come in the market, the Office of Drug Safety, and the much larger part of the FDA and the leaders of the drug division of the FDA. So instead of making a fundamental change in the power relationship between the Office of Drug Safety and the rest of the drug division, they are putting up this smokescreen outside advisory committee that's going to report to the same people that are suppressing decisions from the Office of Drug Safety. It is not going to have any independent authority to do anything, and it's going to provide some patina for an FDA that stays the same. I've been following these issues for 34 years. The Office of Drug Safety has had three or four different names while I've been there, because whenever a crisis comes up, instead of actually doing something, they change the name. This time, they're leaving the name the same, but putting in place an outside group that's going to be dependent on the FDA for information, and they're certainly not going to do anything bolder than what the bosses at the FDA, funded by the drug industry, want them to do. Dr. Crawford, who has been nominated for commissioner, cannot do a good job. He has worked for the drug industry. He is beholden in many other respects to industry, such as the food industry. He had a miserable record because much of the last 4 years, he was the acting commissioner. He was the acting commissioner when FDA decided not to put a black box warning on Bextra and on Vioxx and Celebrex 4 years ago. He was the FDA commissioner during most of the time when FDA let the death toll mount and mount on ephedra, this dangerous dietary supplement. So his record as acting commissioner is terrible. There's no reason to think his record as commissioner is going to be any better.
When you go into the drugstore and you get a prescription filled and you ask the pharmacist for the insert, because you can't see it, you get your little pill box, you know, the little plastic container, but that comes in the actual container. There's a couple things they can give you. They can give you the insert, or they can pull something off of their own computer. Can you explain the difference?
99% of the time when a patient goes into the drugstore and gets a prescription filled, they get something called a patient information leaflet. These have been studied by the FDA and found to have extraordinarily incomplete, inaccurate, and dangerous information in them. The FDA has no control over the content of these leaflets. What the FDA does have control over is the actual, as you said, package insert that goes with the drug, or is in what many people know as the physician's desk reference, the PDR. We have been pushing the FDA, I think, for 22 years to start taking control of the kind of information that is in these leaflets. For about a dozen drugs right now, the FDA does dictate what's in the leaflets, and maybe what is being said by Dr. Crawford is it will go up to two or three dozen. For the other thousands of drugs, the same kind of inaccurate information is going to keep going up. The kind of information that we have in our book, Worst Pills, Best Pills, and that's on our website, worstpills.org, is an attempt to fill in the gaps that are missing in the information in these patient information leaflets, in the information that is put out in drug ads, and in the information that the FDA makes public. The FDA is talking in a desperate situation because they're beginning to get congressional oversight, which they haven't had for 15 years. They're beginning to talk about doing all kinds of good things. I don't believe it, because as long as they are taking $150 million a year from the drug industry to review drugs, they're going to be giving the drug industry their money's worth. So that, by and large, what people get when they get their prescription filled is information that is inaccurate enough that it may cost their lives. We actually, on behalf of a now dead 9-year-old child named Corey Christian, with his parents, we asked the FDA to start putting out a much larger number of accurate leaflets. That was a few years ago, and the FDA is still sort of siding with the medical profession and with the pharmaceutical industry and pharmacists, and not putting their imprimatur on this otherwise misleading information that is going out there.
Finally, Dr. Wolf, what is the number one recommendation you have to people who are in the hospital or go to their doctor? What should they say? What should they be aware of? People have just an implicit faith in their doctors, and they trust that they're doing the best for them.
I don't think doctors maliciously do things. I think that doctors become very misinformed about prescription drugs. A very tiny amount of time is devoted, medical school or residency, to training doctors to be suspicious about any new drug, unless it's a breakthrough drug. So I think the number one piece of advice, which we discuss in detail on our website, worstpills.org, and in the book, Worst Pills, Best Pills, don't use any new drug. If someone is prescribing a drug for you, ask when it came on the market. If it is not a breakthrough drug, say you'd rather have an older drug, because the older drugs have passed the hurdle of the first 7 years. They're still on the market, and they have not yet presumably had a black box warning, or if they have, at least we know something about them that we didn't know in the first 7 years. People need to be very cautious. The FDA is not functioning as it should be to protect the public from the pharmaceutical industry's excesses. It seems to be acting more as a health agency to protect the financial interests of the pharmaceutical industry, and they're misinforming doctors. So just be very cautious about any new drug that comes on the market. And when you take a new drug, if some change occurs in your illness, the first suspicion should be it's an adverse drug reaction until proven otherwise, and call your doctor, because in too many instances, that's exactly what it is. And instead of thinking, well, your disease isn't responding, we should increase the dose of the drug, it may be the drug that's causing this new symptom, whether it is falling down or your blood pressure falling out or Parkinson's disease or other kinds of serious problems, loss of memory. So be very, very cautious.
Dr. Sidwolf, the
patient.
On that note, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Your book, Worst Pills, Best Pills, A Consumer's Guide to Avoiding Drug-Induced Death or Illness. Dr. Sidwolf is the head of Public Citizens Health Research Group. This is Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. Simbarere Antonios Carlos here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Police in Brazil have arrested a second man over the killing of U.S.-born Catholic nun Dorothy Stang. Dorothy Stang died in the Amazon rainforest. They say Refran das Neves Salles is the key suspect in the murder of the 73-year-old nun. She dedicated her life to the people of the Amazon. She lived and worked in Brazil for more than 30 years. Another man has been charged with conspiracy to murder. He denies any involvement. Dorothy Stang moved to the Pará region of the Amazon in the 70s. She moved there to work with peasant farmers on building sustainable agricultural settlements. She began confronting the powerful loggers and ranchers in the area who were illegally cutting down areas of the rainforest. In the weeks before Dorothy Stang was murdered, ranchers had been trying to expel the farmers by burning down their huts. According to reports, Sister Stang was killed because she was trying to stop logging by a powerful rancher. Police are still searching for the man, who they believe has fled the area. Dorothy Stang was shot dead as she read from her Bible, her killings being compared to the assassination of the activist Chico Mendez in December of 1988. He, too, was killed for his defense of the Amazon rainforest. We're joined now by Sister Joan Krim. She's a longtime friend of Dorothy Stang. She went to Brazil with Sister Stang in 1966 and lived and worked there for 10 years. She spoke with Dorothy Stang a week before she was killed. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you very much.
First, our condolences.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Can you talk about Sister Dorothy Stang? What was she doing in the Amazon? Can you talk about what you understood happened in the end?
Yes. Dorothy moved into the Amazon area when the government had been giving land to peasant farmers in order to populate the Amazon area somewhat. She felt that the presence of the church should be there, and she wanted to support them spiritually and materially. She realized in the 80s that the loggers and the ranchers were beginning to come into the area and take over the land that had been given to the farmers. The peasants had not been given the deeds to the land, so they have no proof that the land belongs to them. And Sister Dorothy has been trying to get the federal government and the state government to act to protect the peasant farmers.
We're talking to Sister Joan Krim about Dorothy Stang. Can you talk about the people that Sister Stang worked with?
The people that Sister Dorothy worked with are very simple farmers who have come from a situation of oppression in the state of Maranhão, where they worked for other landowners. And this was their chance to have their own little tract of land and become independent farmers. They're wonderful people. They're beautiful. They're peace-loving people. And Sister was teaching them sustainable farming so that they could farm their land but save the rainforest at the same time.
Can you explain exactly what happened in the end, what you understood to have taken place?
The news we have received so far is that Sister was, the day before she died, that Friday, she had taken food and clothing into a tiny village that had been burned down. The people were hiding in the forest, and she was taking food and clothing to them. The next day, she was going to the little village of Boa Esperança, which means good hope, and she walked the 30 kilometers to get there. While she was walking in the path, she was accosted by two gunmen, one with a pistol, one with a revolver. She reached in her little cloth bag that she always carried with her, took out her Bible, and said to them, "This is my weapon." And she opened it and began to read from the Bible. And they stepped back, listened a minute, and then shot her 6 times. And she died immediately.
And the person that they've taken into custody now, do you have any faith that he was involved?
What I read in the paper said that they believe he was one of the gunmen, the one that they caught yesterday. The gentleman that they caught before that, that turned himself in, said that he had hired gunmen for other killings, but he was not guilty of hiring the two that killed Sister Dorothy. Now, what is true and what isn't, we'll have to wait and see.
And the actual rancher, who they say is in hiding now?
Yes. Some of the people who live in the area said that shortly after the killing, they heard and saw a little plane take off. So he may have just flown to some other city. We don't know. We're still waiting for word.
We understand that the president Lula is declaring the whole area, or at least 8 million acres, a preserve. Can you talk about that?
We hope. we actually hope that this will happen. The Amazon area is so huge that it's hard to govern it. And the illegal loggers and ranchers have been cutting down the Amazon for a long time, and it's hard to get a hold of it. The president is reserving that land now, but even the military, I heard a broadcast from Brazil, and even the military are saying it's going to be very difficult to stop them just because of the immensity of the forest. I do believe that the president has good intentions, and I think he's going to do all he can to keep that reserve, but it's going to be difficult.
Well, Sister Joan Krim, I want to thank you very much for being, as we remember, Sister Dorothy Stang and learn about the circumstances of her death. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Bye. We wrap up today. Thank you. We wrap up today honoring Black History Month with the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Audre Lorde,
Muhammad Ali,
Stephen Biko,
John Coltrane,
Maya Angelou,
Odetta.
The Pacifica Radio Archive celebrates Black History Month by honoring the voices of a revolution.
Malcolm X,
Gwendolyn Brooks,
Ralph Ellison,
John Rapp,
June Jordan,
Nelson Mandela.
From the Montgomery bus boycott to the Black Power movement to the fight for reparations, Pacifica was there.
Every one of us, you know, who's witnessed Chicago probably has to recognize that what happened in Chicago was really not shocking. It was not particular to that city in any sense. You know, that we're all living in Chicago, America, and that means we're living in a place that is, you know, it's consecrated to violence in a sense. And when I say to violence, I mean to the violation of everybody's right to a humanly well-kept and well-spent life. Just consider the Biafran crisis, for example, and the unspeakable inertia of this country, you know, vis-a-vis, you know, the Biafrans and the children there who have been dying. Well, what can you say? You know, it's, I mean, this nation is, you know, by my standards, it's unrecognizable as a human society at this point. It seems to me that it is an animal world of technological interests and money purposes, period.
That was a youthful June Jordan from an interview with Julius Lester from Pacifica Radio's WBAI in New York City, recorded September 15th, 1968.
And that was from the Pacifica Radio Archives, as we celebrate the archives as well as Black History Month this month. And that does it for today's broadcast. Tomorrow on Wednesday, I'll be at UC Santa Cruz remembering Ruben Salazar, a slain journalist in California. On March 5th, I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin, and on March 10th in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, John Hamilton, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, and Jeremy Scahill. Mike DeFilippo and Ryan Abernathy are engineers. If you'd like to sign up for our Daily Digest, our headlines every day on our website, go to democracynow.org. We also have transcripts of the broadcast and archive video and all audio of Democracy Now! Programs. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.